All right. We're going to rock and roll. Oh, you have notes for these?
Well, I printed this one out because it was a long one.
Cheated.
The other one I'm going to paraphrase because I pretty much know what it's about. We're going to talk about Star Wars.
Oh, is there a website you want me to pull up?
Star what Wars. Are we talking about for this one?
The Thing.
Which ones?
The
82 and 2011 prequel.
Okay.
I love.
Is there a website you want me to pull up?
Richard, the star.
What?
The star of the 1982 version. What's his name?
Okay, that's the first website.
Didn't he have a beard?
Not Patrick Swayze.
He was my favorite.
kurt Russell.
Russell? Kurt Russell, yeah.
I love his character. He made great movies.
He did Escape to New York, dude.
Mine is Escape from L.A.
Escape to New York.
Escape from New York. You should just stop there. Escape from L.A. was on the other day, and I had to watch it just to go, yep, stupid movie.
Still just as bad.
Wilford.
Yep. The dogs were the first that you got to see it, that you kind of saw the thing, and it kind of escaped.
That wasn't a gotcha moment.
No, that was the first, oh, shit, moment in the movie. Hit it, Richard.
I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. It's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's surely the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying to say, well, I don't know, but I thought
welcome, everyone, to another episode of Comic Pop Library, episode 21. I'm Richard, along with...
Chris.
Matt.
April.
Logan.
And we all sound so enthused at times here.
Oh, sorry.
Woo!
Oh, this episode, we are going to be reviewing John Carpenter's 1982 The Thing and 2011's
prequel
The Thing
it.
Prequel, yes. So we will be discussing the short story along with this, plus possibly little bits of the 51 movie, but we're going to concentrate on the two newer movies of the franchise. Before we get started, we'll take a pause for a short little spot for the Dodge City Public Library.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. As we understand, there might be some fans of nonfiction materials in CPL land, so why not head over to www.dcpl.info and check out our podcasts. We have the nonfiction fix you've been looking for. Every month, Michael, our public service librarian, and I review a nonfiction book or other item for you to consider reading or adding to your collection. So, if you love the land of black and white informative materials, head on over and check us out. By the way, Michael thinks he's a different fictional character in every episode. No guessing what he'll be next month.
And we are back, and we have a couple of emails again this time. The first one is from Charlene. She wrote back in regards to our 17.5 episode where Matt and I went to Wichita, Kansas's exploration place where they have the Star Wars where science meets imagination exhibit. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed three members of the 501st 70th Explorers Garrison. That is here in Kansas and Missouri.
Did we do podcast on that yet?
I uploaded the interview.
Oh,
yeah,
did
you uploaded the interview. I'm going to put a little bit into that. If you don't know what the 70th Explorers are, they have a website, 70thExplorers.com. Go there, check them out. It's kind of a cool thing. The 501st is a division of the 70th Explorers, if you want to say that.
501st is the main group, national and international. That's what everybody falls under is the 501st, and then they have their garrisons underneath that.
Okay.
501st what?
Star Wars costuming group.
Okay, thank you.
Basically. It's not just go buy a Halloween costume off the shelf. They spend hundreds of dollars on these costumes, sometimes thousands.
For those who have no life.
Apparently.
Oh, no. They're pretty
they were cool.
I guess when we talk about it, we have Matt and I are doing never mind. You're going to find out how little of a life that Matt and I have in the future.
Okay. But they're a group that goes around and does charity work, and they are a nonprofit group, and they were there at the event in Wichita, so we did a little interview with them on 17.5. Go back in the feed.
The 501st is a charity group?
Yes.
Yeah, they do not get paid.
They do not get paid. They
wow. Okay. Now you feel bad, huh?
No, because...
Now you feel bad.
No. No, as in they are a charity or they are donated or they donate to charity?
They donate their time to charity. Okay. Like if there's an event happening like this Exploration Place event, all their time spent there in costume is at no charge. Gotcha. Nobody ever gets charged. They go to hospitals and visit kids' wards just to, you know, bring the kids
okay.
up.
Gotcha.
Lift their spirits.
Gotcha. Okay. That's important because if they're for hire.
Well, they're not for hire.
In a sense. Nope.
But we did speak with this, Matt and I, to them for libraries. You can contact them. Find out. You can go to the 501st webpage as well if you're outside of the Kansas area. But they have groups throughout the state. And depending on how close they are to you and what's going on.
I hear breathing.
Oh, Logan, step back a little bit.
I hear this. You have to remember, my headset's a little bit louder than yours, so I can hear everything.
But if the libraries can contact the 501st, find out what your garrison is. Ours is the 70th, of course. And they have a little
application. Which is the subgroup.
The subgroup of 501st, right. And you can contact them for library events. They will come to your libraries at no charge and put on an event. Depending on if they have people available, because, you know, they do have jobs. They have to work. This is just on their free time that they go out and do this. So that would be something that libraries could do and add a little something to the programming if they want to do something on Star Wars.
So you might find out what a female bounty hunter might look like.
Just go to the website. We got pictures.
There you go.
Yes, on the interview link, we have the pictures of the three we interviewed in costume. So, and one of them is doing it as Zam Wessel.
Mm-hmm.
So there is female bounty hunters. But the email was from Charlene. She was wondering, her husband wasn't too excited about going to the exhibit. I did email her back, and basically I would say, if you have the time, it's well worth the trip to go. And if you're within the area, you know, if you're going to travel 6-8 hours, it might be a little bit of a trip. But one of the things that was commented to us was, after it leaves Kansas in September, it goes to, I think, 3 more stops within the nation, and then it gets mothballed for an indefinite period of time. So the other 3 locations are on the coastal areas, if I remember right.
These are actual Star Wars artifacts.
Yes, some of these were artifacts? Actually, well, they were actually
movie props.
Movie props.
Props.
Yes.
They were actually used in the movies.
They said they had to keep the room at a specific temperature so it wouldn't affect them.
Oh, they protect.
And if you listen,
yeah.
If you listen to
museum
the
museum paintings,
if you listen to the interview, she explained how they get them out of the box and all this stuff that they have to do. That they are priceless.
Well,
I guess
gone,
if you want to say
gone.
They're gone, they're gone. Yeah, it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and they had like a 3 or if not more 4-foot Millennium Falcon and a X-wing that was huge. It was probably 3-4 feet as well. It was very nice. The exhibit was very tastefully done. Very interesting. Has hands-on experience as well.
Yeah.
That makes it sound
rich. Even if you're not a huge Star Wars fan or even a Star Wars fan at all, I would say even go to it just for the kind of how Star Wars may have, I don't want to say influenced, but some of the technology that they use, we're using today even.
Right.
In different stuff. It was really interesting.
And one of the things, you can go to our Facebook page, Comic Pop Library, and I have uploaded our first round of photos. I went a second weekend and got a few more close-up photos as well because we were a little bit rushed on media day, but we got quite a few good ones, and then I went through and got a few more close-ups. I'm putting those up on our website slowly at a time to sprinkle them in, but we will have them all on our Facebook page as well. So if you want to see the pictures and see what it's like, that'll give you an idea, but yes, go if you can. It's well worth it.
You gonna read the email?
Yes.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Okay. I'll take it. Chris does not like Star Wars.
Why not? Movies were okay.
I don't think he's quite as a fan as we are.
Evidently not. Our second email is, there's a big section in here that I'm not going to read because it's asking us about 3
He's holding up
graphic novels.
Like 10 pieces of paper right now.
Just
I'll find out.
So. Just 3. But this is in regards to episode 16 where we reviewed Norgard Across Thin Ice. And this is from Jeffrey Eddy. He is actually the president of Sofa Wolf Press. So that was kind of nice of him, and we appreciate you sending us an email, Jeffrey. To go into it, it says, "Hi, folks. The creators pointed us to episode 16 of your podcast, where you did a review of their title, Norgard Across Thin Ice. Thanks so much for the positive words. As small producers in the indie market, every little bit helps. I did want to clarify a couple of points you discussed on the show, just for your own information and hopefully future interest in the series. Point one, Pi is actually a border collie, and yes, she is female." So we got that one right. We got that one right. So both of these things, being an unusual breed to be leading the team as well as an unusual gender to be doing so, do come out throughout the whole scope of the story. Point two, the plan is for 3 books. And as you all surmise, the first book is way more exposition heavy than 2 or 3 will be. The team is actually very nearly at Tartok, the mine that starts out the story, and things are going to accelerate fairly quickly in terms of story and action. Point three, as for the location, national issues, the creators intentionally kept it somewhat cagey. The area the story takes place in is roughly that of Northeast Canada in terms of geography, but the national boundaries and allegiances are not intended to match up with real early 1900s history.
Right.
Olag is an expatriate from something Russia-ish, and the Norgard team operates as a semi-extension of a frontier military as something that is vaguely USA-ish. That is about as detailed as it ever gets, and it is not ultimately more important than a sense of ambiance that there is an us and a them to play at the national level. So hope this helps clarify some of the unknowns, and we are delighted to send you along a copy of issue 2 to review when it comes out next summer. So
sweet.
That will be very nice, Jeff. We appreciate that. So I think everybody remembers those points that we discussed in the
podcast. I do after you said them. I remember us talking about them.
So that kind of is nice for them to clarify those and for our listeners. And yes, Jeff, if you would definitely send us a second copy of the Norgard, we will review it for you. And he goes on and says, "We are actually a little bit more along the spectrum of full-service indie publisher than a vanity press or a publish-on-demand house. Although we are definitely at the smaller end of the register in terms of output, we do between 10 to 15 titles a year, most of which run the entire gamut from acceptance through editing, layout, production, and promotion. In the case of Across Thin Ice, we had worked with the 2 artists. Tegan writes and sketches, while Tess does the amazing watercolors. Previously, we do not frequently pick new projects up via submissions and open pitches at trade shows. We do focus entirely on the talking animal meta genre, partly because that is where we all come to know each other, but also because we know that there is a lot of excellent material that just needs a little push to get it noticed and widely appreciated. While the furry fandom is our bread and butter, we have been nurturing a growing audience at the mainstream comic shows for over 10 years now." So that kind of explains it is primarily the talking animal stories that you will receive. We kind of talked about some of the books that librarians might kind of be familiar with it. And during that episode was, you know, the Aaron Hunters, the Cat ones, the Warriors. She has one called Seekers on Bears. She's getting ready to do another one about dogs called Survivors, I believe. Was that it, Logan?
Yep.
Hey, did they have anything to do with, not to put product placement into this podcast or anything, they have anything to do with the Mio commercials? You know, that little juice thing?
That is kind of funny. I hadn't thought of that.
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. Not to my knowledge. But they go on and saying there's some other additional titles that they list and describe here within the email that if we are interested in reviewing, they will be happy to send on along in a review copy. Some of their titles for libraries are 17 and older, so they do have some adult material. So if you do order from them, you know, go to their website, check it out first. You might need, you know, and when you get it in, read it. You might look at it and decide if it needs to be an adult collection or the young adult collection. So you'll have to use some of your interpreting skills as a librarian when you get these books in. And, of course, you can go to sofawoof.com to look at their catalog. And they invite us to look at their catalog as well. So we will be getting back with you, Jeff. We appreciate it. And he says, "Thanks again for the good words. I'll talk to the creators about directing the followers to the podcast and the site." So thank you very much, Jeff. Definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, it's really cool that we got a good email from, you know, someone that actually listened to the podcast. But it was also from but it was also from the creators of this. So they're actually looking
Well, the creators directed the
word
Jeff,
is spreading about us.
So.
Yeah, directed
it's,
Jeff
it's
to,
nice to hear that.
To hear that. So yeah, it is. It is nice that we're getting noticed for something.
Dad looked at the stats or whatever last night, and there was a lot.
It's good.
We're still averaging about 2,000 unique hits a month on the website.
That's pretty good.
And I think from the first of the year till now, we're at 11,000 unique hits on the site.
I'm one of them. So
you're one of them.
I'm not.
I can't remember the other stats, but
that's good.
So it's nice to see that people are out there listening and looking at the blog. So thank you, everyone that is out there, and thank you, Jeff, for the kind words. And we will probably be getting with you and seeing what we can do in the future to help out your company. And be forewarned, we have a couple of teenagers that can be brutally honest. The adults in the crowd try, but sometimes we're brutally honest too. It slips out.
There are some that appreciate that, though.
Yes, so we will be happy to give our feedback, and if it's anything like Across Thin Ice, like I said, I loved it. I know Matt loved the artwork, and so did Chris. When we get the next two books in, we'll go ahead and maybe read those and do reviews as well, and maybe that'll encompass the whole story. So that'd be nice. And if you are interested in sending us an email, send them to admin@comicpoplibrary.com. If you have any suggestions on titles you would like for us to review, send those to suggestions@comicpoplibrary.com. We'd be glad to hear from you. We'll read them on the air, and with the suggestions, we'll work them into the rotation. So thank you very much, everybody.
Dum, dum, dum.
And now, to get into the main part of the podcast.
Yay.
We have a couple of things to discuss.
He's getting into that a little too much.
Definitely. We're going to start it off. I don't know if there's any way to talk about this without just jumping in and talking about both of them since they're so intertwined.
Yeah, I don't think you can discuss these two movies without jumping both feet first into both movies at the same time.
I know.
Did you watch them, Chris? Mm-mm. You haven't seen them at all.
Nope, I didn't watch them.
April.
But I am
have
here
you watched the 82 version
for moral support?
2011?
No, I'm here to I'm here. I want to hear how it compares to the short story that we discussed last episode.
A lot better.
Okay. If you want to talk about that, the 82 version is the closest adaptation to the short story.
It's my favorite.
And I watched it years ago, you know, when I was young.
That's when I watched
Logan,
no, I was probably younger than April. I was probably younger than you.
I was like,
April watched it probably 5 years ago, so that'd be about, I can't remember, eight or nine. Logan and I just rewatched it recently. So
I had a friend who said that movie needs to be in everybody's personal library.
Oh, it's a great movie.
It is really good.
It is a very good movie.
And both of these movies are rated R, I believe.
I believe it's for
82
content.
Is I'm not sure about the remake. I'm thinking it's rated R too.
I'm thinking it's for content and language.
Bloody violence.
I don't look at it. I look at it as a PG-13 movie more. Oh. Like there's not a lot of violence for me in it. Like,
Wow. We let her watch. Jeez.
Desensitizing her.
Remember, we've already watched Archer.
Yeah. Never mind.
And
that just. Yeah. Never that's mind. That's good enough.
And
that's close enough.
Every year on Halloween, Sci-Fi has a
Saw.
Yeah.
They like the Saw.
I love those movies. Mm.
But
that's violence.
We jump into them.
But yeah, the 82 one.
It differs in the beginning. It definitely differs.
I want to ask you about the very, very beginning.
Okay.
Because when did Predator come out? It came after that, right? Pretty sure it did.
Probably.
Yes. It was
the opening scene is the saucer and the thing. The opening scene is the saucer coming down and crashing to Earth.
Right.
Wasn't there a similar scene like that at the beginning of Predator?
God, it's been so long since I've seen Predator.
Because I watched that, I was like, this looks like
wasn't
a really
that the
familiar
second
scene.
AVP?
You don't remember Predator?
It's been so long since I've seen Predator.
I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The second AVP?
Alien versus Predator? No.
No, the second one.
Well, they
the
did crash. Yeah, they did.
Yeah. I don't remember.
But it seemed like I remember seeing that shot of the Earth and a saucer coming in.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that.
It's pretty stock, but I wanted to say the thing was the first one to use that.
Well, it may have been. And I know to the movie versus the short story, the short story kind of jumps into them being there and about the crash, if I remember.
Right.
Where the movie starts out a helicopter chasing a dog. And people shooting at the dog, trying to kill the dog, and shows up at this U.S. military kind of outpost type thing. Right.
And it's set in Antarctica. Yeah.
Set in Antarctica, just like the same thing. But you don't know why they're chasing the dog. You find out later.
Yeah, it leads.
The thing.
Yeah.
And leads into that. That's the, you know, difference in the beginning. A lot of what happened in the book, they use in the movie. I know Chris talked about them, or Logan, one of them said about stabbing the hot metal into the blood
and
going,
right.
Ah, they do that in the movie.
Yeah. That's in the 1982 one, or
the 82 one. So when they follow that pretty close to the book and how they decide who's actually infected or
but it kept you entertained. Like,
well, it was that whole mind experiment thing that we talked about in the last episode. That
thought experiment.
Thought experiment.
One that really did that was the first version, the book.
Well, you have to take into the.
Oh wait, you're talking about the psychoanalysis,
the movie, right?
The psychic,
the John Carpenter thing, where it's
the whole sound real close,
not knowing
who's who,
what's what.
Who do you trust?
It gets intense.
It is because they're trying. They know something's wrong, but they don't know who it is. And I mean, I think back to the scene where they had them all tied up.
So it wasn't obvious that there was an alien amongst them.
Not at first. They figure it out, but they don't know who it is.
Now, this alien, does it still have this whole biological transfer becomes
yes.
him?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And that's from the book, too, where the 51 movie did not do that at all.
Right.
Like if the thing sneezed and you happened to catch it in your face, you would turn it.
It kind of... It was actually...
It slowly takes you over. You might not realize it until you get to your brain or something.
No, actually, in the movie, they show it actually attacking the dogs, and the dogs trying to run and things of that stuff, and then kind of catching it mid-transformation.
True, but that's a whole lot of the cells at once. When they take it to the cellular level, just one of the cells and a couple of the dog cells, it's...
It incorporates
increasingly
slow.
Yeah, it is kind of slow.
It just depends on how
aspect.
Much you're infected.
Yeah, if you want to call it an infection, I'd say
to a degree.
So this is a biohazard.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of those where
you know in the
to the cellular level where the cells split
to
multiply and split and split and split.
Right.
That's the same way with this body when it's
osmosis.
Intercepting. You know, when it's infecting a host. It goes in, and you have all these cells, and it attacks that cell. But instead of splitting, it just takes
over that cell, replicates
itself.
And
replicates it. And like Matt was saying in the previous podcast, it kind of absorbs, and the previous conscience is kind of gone, and the information, right.
So is this, like, biologically, is it pretty close, or is this...
What
do you mean, pretty close?
How much fiction is actually this whole process?
Oh, it's complete fiction.
We have no clue.
They just make up little...
Hey, these are aliens. You don't know.
Yeah, they're aliens. But it's good. I don't know. I think... hope a lot of people have seen this.
It's
definitely a classic, I think.
The 82 one is the only one I didn't fall asleep on. And that's
really?
A good sign. Yeah, I fell asleep on the 2011 one, too.
Really? How could you fall asleep on that one?
It was boring as crap.
It follows the same kind of line, but... I guess when I first watched it years and years ago, what freaked you out was the not knowing.
Right.
And it was really kind of intense and kept you going.
So the 1982 version, does it freak you out like Scream does?
No.
It has its gotcha moments.
It has one great gotcha moment.
Right.
Where the doctor, one of the guys, I can't remember, is he the guy who got shot? What happened to him that he was laying on the table that they said he didn't have a... heartbeat.
That was the guy that they shot while he was going in the base hunting the dog, right?
No. This was later on in the movie after the dogs and somebody's already been infected and something, I can't remember what happens in the movie that this guy is dead laying on the table.
Is that the one where the dog got the very first one?
I don't remember what happened, but he's laying on the table and the doctor grabs the shock paddles and goes, clear! And zaps a dude. Well, what happens when you zap living cells that are really pissed off at you right now because you just zapped them? It eats him. Well, it attempts
takes
to eat
off
him.
Basically opens up in a big old jaw in the stomach and basically cuts him off mid-arm.
Yeah, pretty much. And goes ballistic. So. And, yeah, that was the moment you all go, holy crap. And then from there they fried it
with a flamethrower, yep. And the head melts off and comes off and comes a spider-type alien and crawls away upside down.
Yeah, it's kind of...
It's kind of freaky.
I want to see this in Japanese anime.
Why do you have flamethrowers in Antarctica?
It's chilly there.
Yeah, we've got a lot of fires.
Duh.
To keep warm.
That's the only part
of this. In case
you're
really cold.
This is the only part of this entire movie that I'm actually still trying to figure out why. And someone may be able to explain it to me. Maybe it's for...
Brush clearing.
Melt. Brush clearing.
There's so much of it in Antarctica.
Well, the only thing I can think melting the snow for a path to make ice, you know, so it doesn't collapse or something like that. Or heating up equipment.
Dynamite works better.
I don't know. That's what I was trying to figure out.
Dynamite's more dangerous.
I was trying to figure out why they have flamethrowers.
Flamethrowers aren't. Exactly.
Dynamite would make a ditch.
Nowadays we have what do they call that? Cable.
Deck cord.
Deck cord. Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure that out. Figure y'all can enlighten me.
The movie magic.
Exactly.
And they have
a lot of them.
True. Two or three?
Really?
I can't remember.
They had the bombs too.
Well, they had some dynamite there too. And the helicopter, the first helicopter you find out later was Norwegian, and they had grenades.
Yeah, he was throwing
grenades. Tossed them out at the dog. He was like, really? You're going to try to hit a dog with a grenade that's moving? You're never going to hit that from a helicopter.
He's trying to shoot him from a helicopter.
Well, he might have a little bit better luck on that.
I don't know. Have you been in a helicopter ride?
Never.
Well, they actually showed on one of the TLCs or History Channels where they had a guy up in a helicopter shooting a sniper rifle and how they were having to do the trajectory and the turbulence from the blades and how it would curve back and come back and hit the target. And the first run he missed, the second run he hit it dead center.
Well, that's typical sniper. You always miss the first time.
Exactly.
So it can be done.
It can be done. But, yeah, okay, he's a Norwegian scientist. I'm not sure he's going to.
They trained their scientists very well in Norway.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But evidently not. He never hit it, so.
Well.
You have to work as assassins in their spare time to make it.
I know why they had flamethrowers. Because they were a horrible shot with a real bullet.
Is that what it is? Well, apparently the Norwegian guy is because he shoots someone when they land the helicopter. He's trying to shoot the dog, and he shoots one of the U.S. guys in the leg or something.
Yeah.
And they end up killing him before he can tell them what's going on.
When you don't have shotguns, you got flamethrowers.
You might be in want of a translator, too, on that part. So,
well,
not too much of a
true.
Who knows? But then they end up going up to the Norwegian base to see what was going on. And this is where the prequel kind of ties into that a little bit.
They find it all destroyed.
They find it all destroyed. They find some of the people dead.
Yeah, right.
They find the ice where the creature was in. Things of that stuff where you didn't, you know, I guess when you jump into the first movie, or I guess second movie, the 82 version, you're jumping into where the book is, where the short story is, where the 2011 release brings you back to kind of finding all that stuff.
Right. Because they did go from the camp. They found a video that led them to the crash site.
Right.
Where the saucer was kind of destroyed. They had...
And where they dug it up.
Dug it up, right.
Where they dug the creature up. The thing up. So it follows kind of some of the main points that are in the short story.
Right. And they, you know, like I said, it's
like
been
how
so
they determine who's infected, who's not infected. If you want to say, quote, infected or not infected, who's the alien?
Infected.
I still remember the scene, and I can remember it because it was kind of funny, where he's got all the blood, and he's heating up the wire with a torch, and he stabs a couple of them, and he's like, yeah, okay. And then he finally stabs one, and it jumps out of the Petri dish, and he's like, oh, crap.
I might have wanted to wear gloves.
It would have jumped up.
Oh, yeah.
This thing is stringy.
It reminds you of the blob.
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
Not it's more like when it's in its not necessarily dissolved state, but diffuse state, it's stringy like membranes. There's a lot of stringiness to it. It's not liquidy. So like
they're
when
polymer chains.
When that hot deal hits the blood, this thicker type blood column comes up, and then there looks like almost like an eye in it that's kind of covered in blood too. And that's where they freak out and throw it.
And he's like,
"Yeah,
yeah."
That's when the guy that they actually was infected starts freaking out, and he's tied up in a chair. And yeah,
didn't he turn out to be the actual infection was spread throughout the bottom of the base?
Well, they're trying to eliminate it, and they're down in the bottom trying to kill it.
But after they were gonna blow the whole base up, didn't they get to see the branches of the huge plant-like version of the thing underneath the band?
That was just tunnels.
Because in the first part, one of the scientists got locked up in a tool shed.
Yeah.
And he was swearing that he was human and all that. And you think throughout the whole movie that he is.
Yep.
But then at the end, a couple of them go to the shack. They find a hidey hole. They go down in, and he's tunneled through all this area. I don't know how far. And he's working on a miniature version of the saucer.
Yeah. Right.
That was
the 82.
There was something similar to that in the book.
1982 version.
Right. That's why I said they hit a lot of those major points.
He wasn't making a saucer in the book. He was making a generator or something.
Anti-grav generator.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this,
I know
he was
in one of them,
making
there was
something.
A huge version of it underneath the base.
That was 2011, and that was in the spaceship.
That was in the spaceship.
That was the spaceship, which, it was like he was trying to escape, and kind of at the end of the movie, they leave that open thing again, because they end up blowing up the base. Two of the characters are there, and he's like, how long have you? And he said, long enough. And they just kind of sit there, because it realizes it's not going to escape Antarctica at the moment, and it wants to freeze itself again so that someone else will find it.
Right. But you don't know if they're infected or not.
It wasn't 2011 that had the big thing under the base. I know that.
Well,
they went to the UFO in 2011 version.
Right. But the one under the base in the 82 one was just tunnels. There wasn't anything.
Yeah, wasn't anything down there except for what he was trying to build.
The 82 version of the one or the 58 one? No, that was 38. 51 version.
He's doing it too.
They got attacked by... It was the one where they tied the four people up, I'm pretty sure.
That was the 82 one.
That was the 82 version.
And but after that little bit, a whole branch of it came up from underground. Yeah.
I don't remember that ever.
Yes, there was.
That was just that one scene that... It wasn't completely under the base. It was just that area of it. Because the main portion of the thing was in that area. And that's why it came up through and went up into the ceiling and stuff.
Oh, that was when the guy... That was the guy...
No, there was also something bursting from the floorboards.
Right. But
that was the guy. He was...
But it wasn't the whole underground of the base. It was just that local.
It was just that
area.
Guy. And when they stabbed his blood and it showed that he was the thing... He started to transform, I guess you want to say. And he threw whatever tentacles, I don't know what you want to call them, into the ground. And he shot up into the ceiling, trying to get away from the ropes and being tied up. I know what scene you're talking about, but it wasn't that it was spread all over the place. It was just
localized. It was localized in that one.
And I know what scene he's talking about. But it's definitely a good... April's not going to chime in at all. She's still on her phone playing Facebook. I think it's just me and Richard here.
But I think the one thing, when you were talking about the end, you don't really know that they're human or not.
Neither one of the two that survive.
Right. You don't know if they're going to freeze to death, or like Matt said, one of them's an alien and he's going to go back into hibernation again. So they kind of leave that open.
Or they get rescued.
Or rescued.
Not
I don't know.
Very
they,
likely,
didn't they break,
but possible.
Didn't they break the radio
they
or something?
They broke everything.
Yeah.
So that they couldn't... Well, they blew up the base, but before that, so that they couldn't...
They broke the whole thing.
So that they couldn't radio out or something like that.
Yep, what version are we on?
82.
The 82 version. I still like the scene, too, at the beginning where he's playing the Chess
Master 2000.
Did you wake up from
your nap?
I figured we'd already be on the 2011. Like.
And this is the one she said she liked.
Yeah.
If you watch it, there is a little humor at the beginning of the movie, I don't know, throughout the rest, where he's playing the Chess Master 3000 or whatever.
Oh, yes.
And he says, he loses, and he says, cheating bitch, and dumps his drink into it, blows it up.
True. So, and this one was an all-male cast as well. I can tell you each individual character. The only one I remember is Kurt Russell. We mentioned that before we started recording here.
Kurt Russell kind of plays the main character.
All-male cast. There's no females in this one. Like in the 51, they had two.
The 2011 version.
No, 2011.
Yeah. There is
no, the 82 one had no
female
characters. 51 one had two.
So did the
now we jump to 2011.
There was two there.
Yes. So in essence, the 2011
the voice,
one.
The voice of the computer was female.
Okay.
Probably.
There's the gap.
But the 2011 one, to me, resembled the 51 movie real close in the setting.
Maybe that's yes. why I fell asleep.
Because it had the two females. It had the... Well,
the one's a
face.
Scientist, though.
True, they weren't assistants.
What is that supposed to mean?
They were more
true. Well, but the one that was a scientist was pretty much ignored until she figured out some stuff.
Right. The 58 version movie, they were assistants. This is, she's a main character. 51. Dang it. Be quiet, Richard. But if you review the 2011 version.
What?
Do I even want to know what you're going on over there?
Are you sure you're on that last one right?
I don't know where we're at.
My daughter's looking at me like I'm weird. I'm just looking at
she
you.
She are weird. But yeah.
He's Stare staring back. At me.
Well, Matt's talking to you, so I'm just...
Actually,
you're not talking to me.
Actually, when he looks at you, his mouth is optimum to the microphone, where I want it
that way.
And where he would wish he would stay. But
do I have to move this chair? Maybe.
Richard's got to look at who he's talking to, which is why everything fades in and out once in a while.
I'm just that way.
Me
that's
too.
Okay.
But the man, I can't remember. Richard, tell me, how does the 2011 version start out?
Don't adjust your hand too much because I will hear it.
The gals looking into
sensitive microphones. Remember,
no clue what it was of a cow. I think it was.
What about the cow now? Sorry, go ahead.
The 2011 start.
I said, how does that one start out? I can't. I could not remember.
Something into a cow.
She was being recruited to go there.
Yeah,
by one of her friends.
They weren't in Antarctica yet.
Well, I know, but I couldn't remember what
one of the big shot guys.
What she was doing. That she was.
She was sticking something into a cow.
Well, that's not how it starts. The first movie starts
where?
In Antarctica.
No, the 2011 one.
Well, what'd I say?
The first movie.
Oh.
The first movie was not in 2011.
I'm thinking of prequel. First movie, prequel.
Okay, prequel
My
movie.
My bad. And the prequel starts not in that scene. It starts with the radar crew of the Norwegian camp going out over the ice, finding a radio pulse.
Oh, yeah.
Because the magnetics were screwed up.
Right.
Which
Wait
was
a minute.
In the
Norwegians?
Yes.
They're way up north.
No, well, now they're in Antarctica. Oh.
You got to remember, these are they're in Antarctica. They're like the military bases from the 2000 or research bases, I guess, from the 82 version.
In Antarctica.
Yes, in Antarctica.
Well, the Norwegians are way up north.
They don't like have to stay in Norway. They can move
I'm
around.
I'm just checking.
They're in a scientific research base in Antarctica like they are in the 82 version.
Okay.
Right. Have you ever been out of the country?
Out of the state.
Yeah. Have you ever been out of the
keep
state?
Keep going.
Out of the city.
Out of your house.
Been out of the city.
Hey.
No.
There you go.
No, yeah, I was. I guess I was assuming that they were on, I don't know, traveling there or something. I don't know. Anyway.
No, it was already an established station. This is at the same time frame of the 82 one.
Right.
It's just like maybe,
you know,
2-3 months prior to the 82 one. And then it leads up to the opening of the 82 movie.
Right, with the dog running away.
So
right.
It kind of...
So the Norwegians were there before the
no,
US the,
both
Army.
Camps were there.
Oh, okay.
It's a different base.
It's a totally separate base.
Right.
Yeah, they go visit it, remember?
And
I didn't see it, so I need...
Well, they find the alien, they dig it up, they bring it back, and I don't know if it was an intentional thawing.
I don't think it was.
It was... Well, what happened in the... Oh, this is calling back to the 51 one. They threw an electric blanket over it and
retarded.
It heated it up and melted. In the 11 one, they drilled to get that specimen.
Right, to
and
get a
from
sample.
That crack led to the awakening of the creature. And to me, it just started expanding at that point to
and
where
it
just
exploded
out of the ice.
And it
which
broke
kind
the
of freaked
floor.
The guy out.
Right. Like on the... It was like here's a level, it's on the bottom, and it went up
through
floor.
The ceiling.
Well, it's also a floor, too.
Well, it is.
So.
It's almost always a floor.
In this podcast, a ceiling equals floor.
Apparently. It is, too.
Pretty sure, at least.
It's kind of interesting. In this version, they don't adapt the same method of detecting the thing,
yeah.
as they do in the 82 version.
They use the thing.
Yeah, she stumbles upon a shower where she finds some blood and some fillings.
Like teeth fillings?
Yes.
Okay.
And kind of goes,
dental. Huh?
I believe at this time, have they already seen the creature at that time? It's yeah. been a while since I've
They
watched
know
it.
That the creature has escaped because the
they
block
just
of
don't
eyes.
Know
right.
who
they
it
don't
is
know
now.
What it looks but, like. And, but they don't know it can duplicate people
right.
yet.
And she kind of figures, I think they actually have by then.
No, have they?
Yeah,
they
do because remember. The other lady explodes at her.
That's right.
That was after that
scene. Yeah, it was. It was after because the lady got her to go with her by saying she saw somebody go out of the
oh, that's
bathroom
right.
after the bloody mess was cleaned up, remember?
I don't care. It was before.
April rewrites the movie.
April's world. We're going to
You're the
April's
one who
world.
Fell asleep during this movie, so how do you know anything
no,
that happened?
This, oh,
I
this
stayed
is...
awake for most of it. I was just on Facebook.
It's got some of the same creatures. The little upside-down two-headed thing that was in the 82 version is
that
in
was
this
awkward.
One. A friend of mine equated that back to Hellraiser kind of thingy creature.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Actually,
same,
I like that
same
movie.
Same type of creature. Yeah.
Okay,
in that
but
one.
I don't get how you can tell by the fill-ins that.
It,
no,
it,
shh, still sorry. Talking. Okay. Like, I get how.
Wow.
I get how if he takes it over, they fall out. But what if you don't have any in, to begin with?
That was part of the point in the movie where that was their method of detection. When she was checking people's mm-hmm. fillings, the one guy said, "So I get accused of being an alien because I have good teeth."
Exactly, like
yeah, wasn't that
it wasn't foolproof, but it was the best way they had
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah, I
don't
say because like
well, like in the, comparing that back to the 1951, did I get it right?
Yes, sure.
One movie. Okay,
let's go with that.
They used a gamma ray detector, right?
Something like that.
They
Geiger.
Used Geiger counter. Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, the and some of the scientists had said they had porcelain
yeah,
fillings
porcelain
instead
fillings.
Of metal, and I'm a testament that you know you can be in your 40s and not have any fillings. I'm
You're an
the,
alien.
Yes.
Kill him. It's the thing.
I have good teeth, too.
Genetics. So it wasn't the greatest thing, but there are some differences in how they portrayed it. The thing is trying to escape back to its ship.
Saucer.
I don't know to escape or get away because they've figured out it
is to exist. Get away. To me, this one was more of the it's here to take over.
Mm-hmm.
Type of feel.
And wanted
these
to let,
two
wanted
movies.
To let its others know.
It's Predator.
That,
it's here.
Yeah.
At least that, if not.
Or go somewhere where
over.
It's more populated. Or...
And this is the point where Logan made earlier in the previous podcast where these aren't necessarily a hive mind per se because they would split off and they would almost act independently of themselves when they were split off from the main creature and almost become their own.
Yeah.
Because they had one that jumped onto one of the scientist's arm and it was almost like an alien face hugger.
It sucked on his
yep.
face.
Yeah. It was kind of one of those.
Yeah. It was a face hugger.
It was a face?
Yeah, face hugger.
It was like alien, you know.
Yeah.
With
right there.
What would you call that?
I don't know what.
It was a facehugger. If a facehugger was a hand.
Yeah,
yeah it kind of looked like
it was a hand, is what it was. Yeah, you're right, Logan.
Chop off your elbow,
but
stick it on somebody's face. There's
at
your
the
face
same
hair.
Time, one of them split and was forming itself back together in one scene. So
yeah.
It wasn't really quite.
Yeah,
said like half it was a hive
Terminator
mind
T3.
Or, yeah, something
like
that.
The concept
yeah,
of what's it called?
Teamwork.
Well, that was that was the T-102, I think. That had
the
Mercury sort of.
Oh thing. Yeah,
yeah, that was Terminator 2. Yeah. But yeah, it was definitely. I like the movie. I like both of them.
I think what was cool about the 11 one was when you watch the 82 one was you go back and you see how they tied it into the 82 movie.
Yeah, and they deleted one of the tie-ins, too.
True.
Really?
Yeah, the guy who slit his wrists.
Okay, let's see. One of the, when they so go
that's
to the
film, that's at 2011 at the end, and that is also when they go to the Norwegian camp in the 82 version.
Well, in the movie, they didn't actually show the radio operator slitting his wrist. They just showed
him
afterwards.
Version?
The 11.
Yes, they just showed him.
It was in a deleted scene. But if you go to the deleted scenes, you actually get to see him actually.
Oh, really?
The creature was outside the door, shaking the door, getting ready to come in. And instead of him facing the creature, he just got out the razor and slit his wrist and his neck.
Really?
But
see,
in the actual movie, they just show
him
already in the chair, already committed suicide. So that was one that they did delete out. You're right, Logan.
Well, they deleted him doing it, but they
left him in.
They still left him they're dead, which they showed in the 82 version. When they went to the camp, the guy was laying there dead, frozen.
Right, and there was the callback where, within the movie, one of the assistants, one of the main scientists was the creature, one of the assistants wasn't, and he fell on the floor, and the scientist kind of went ape nuts and turned into the creature and started crawling to him like a spider type deal, but full size user, mm-hmm. and they started fusing together, so their faces were kind of side by side. Yep. And when they first appeared in the camp at the helicopter, you were mentioning, Matt, in the previous podcast, that, or was it at the beginning of this podcast?
If you'd like to straighten this out, you can email admin at comicpoplibrary.com.
We might or might not listen to you at all.
There's a lot of the same things that happen in both that really hard to keep straight.
And some of the stuff they had to do, the saucer was intact in the 2011.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at the very end, they go back to the saucer, two people, the female scientist that's American and the pilot that's American. And they blow it up to get that destruction in the 82 movie.
And then she fries him because he's missing his earring.
What if it just got ripped out?
You think
it
would be a bloody mess.
True. It's true.
He took it out very gently.
And the hole sealed itself up.
It kind of left another opening in that, too, because it shows her frying the vehicle with him in it, the thing in it, but it never says what happens to her.
Well, there is another...
Logan and I talked about it.
There's a Russian base somewhere, and there's a vehicle right beside her, so...
It was there?
However you want to make it, like...
See, I'm wondering if they had left that open for another...
Yeah. She froze to death.
What I was kind of
not likely.
Logan and I actually watched it twice.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And we watched it together, and then we watched it with April later on. Mm-hmm. And the first time around, him and I both were like, well, they never mentioned the lady. They just leave off her. What happens? Does she walk off and just die or whatever? And we purposely made sure we watched that. And at one point in the movie, they say about 50 miles away is a Russian camp. A Russian base.
Yeah.
And like Logan said, in that scene, she just fries one of the snow cats.
There's another one right
beside it. So that, like you said, leaving it open for another movie, possibly.
Kind of like they did. The 82 version, they definitely, you know, we talked about that, left that at the end. So, I don't know. It's definitely interesting, both movies.
Would you recommend it for a library?
I would. I would say grab the 82 version. I'm sure you can get a copy of it somewhere. And it may even become
To be honest, Logan pretty popular. I saw it in the $5 bin at Walmart, in our Walmart, just yesterday.
I would, just so you could have... both of them and let people watch them, even though the special effects in the 2011 are quite a bit greater because,
it's newer.
Target audience. Newer.
It's not as intense. They leveled that.
And I'm pretty sure the 2011 most libraries are going to have because it's
new.
And it's I don't know if it was recent.
Yeah.
Very recent movie. Recent. You know, that they should have that one in their collection. If they don't, I would say
if
it'd
they
be a good one.
Don't have the 82 one. If people Logan and I watch...
they should get the 82.
Right. They're companion pieces. The 51 one, they could... live without, but the 82 and 11 one, you really need those as companion pieces, and they follow the short story a lot better than the 51 one. So those three together make a pretty nice package.
Yeah, you could. That's why I said in the previous podcast, I would, if they like the movies, let them read the book or the short story. You know, maybe you might want to have that. But yeah, these are two definitely I would say to have. And as Chris asked, audience, I think they're rated R.
They're rated R, you know, parental adult discretion.
The joke at the beginning of the 2011 one and the first person to... Yeah, her.
Yeah, okay, sure.
I have no
idea. No clue. Let's say that again. Do you
remember the joke in the first part of the 2011 one?
What was the joke?
I don't remember, dude.
You don't remember the joke, the two
Tell
people...
Tell us the joke.
Kid walked in on his parents.
That was
Dad
funny.
Walked in
that is
kid
one
and
thing
his mom.
Yeah, that is one thing to mention about this movie. That was actually in the very first part where they were doing the sonar, the ground sonar. A lot of this movie at the very first is Norwegian. And Logan and I watched this. The actors in this camp are actually Norwegian.
Do they have...
And it's subtitled.
Is it Norwegian with English subtitles?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can't remember who asked me about it, because I was talking to somebody and said, well, is the whole movie subtitled? No, it's not. Once it gets established and they bring in the American female scientist and the pilots, you still have some people speaking Norwegian, and there might be a few subtitles in there, but
yeah,
it's
like
primarily in English.
Yeah,
this
like
is
when 2000, they found out
2011. 2011.
Yeah, like
I forgot about that.
They actually did have an alien.
Right.
I forgot about that.
But yeah, Lowen, you're right. I forgot about that joke. Yeah,
it was a funny joke.
But the audience is an adult audience.
You just remember laughing at it.
And then there's
you can't remember the joke, but you remember laughing at it.
No, I remember the joke.
What's the joke?
Okay.
We're explicit anyway.
So the little boy can't get to sleep one night or whatever. And so he somehow winds up to his parents' room, and he opens the door and sees his mom and dad, you know, and he,
and
yeah,
you know,
and yeah, so
he can't say it.
He runs back to his room, and his dad's like, I'll handle this, and he goes back and he opens the door and he sees his son and his, and then like his grandma, this, his grandma, and the son turns to his dad and he's like, not so funny when it's your mom, is it?
What
That's
were they doing?
Funny.
The exact same thing. That
It's funny.
Oh Lord, should we just end it?
Someone's got a warped sense of humor.
It's funny.
The blonde on the end.
But yeah, that's basically the joke. Correct. I forgot about that. Yeah. You're right. But this is one where it's for horror fans as well as sci-fi fans.
Yeah.
So definitely get the first book and the two previous movies. And
we're just going to end the podcast.
I thought I said, stop.
That's what I thought.
But yeah, this would be your sci-fi fans and horror fans both. Thank you. Is there anything else before we close her out?
Nope. I think I'm good. I give her a thumbs up.
Yep. We did forget about the ad thing, didn't we?
We'd like to thank MusicAlley.com for being one of our sponsors and letting us use their website for our intro and outro. It is Andrew Lubman's Train of Thought. We appreciate that very much. If you would like to visit their site at MusicAlley.com, they are an indie music website. You can download songs for 99 cents a piece. You can go there and pretty much find anything you would like to, from American folk to pop to rock. So check them out and see if you can find something you like. The next go around, I believe we're going to try to do probably iRobot. That Chris is having us read.
Yep.
And
Chunkin' Robots and the Twiddling Thing, guys.
And then
it's going to be interesting to see what your guys' take on Robbie.
Robbie the Robot?
Was that the first one?
And then
let's just not talk about that right now.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have April do her first review on the album, music album, One Direction's, what is the
Up
music?
All Night.
Up All Night. So stick around and join us again next time. Comic Pop Library. Thank you, everyone. Have a good one.
Bye.
I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta
thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.